It's good to all see you all here today. It took a little while for some of you to arrive this morning, but as long as you're here, you're here. And this is a wonderful place to be. I learned something last night, and that's going to come out. I didn't have this all prepared even a day ago. This is new. And when did this happen? When did I prepare this? I mostly prepared it while I was on kidney dialysis yesterday. While I was there, I had a pen and a paper, and I began to write. And I thought, what could help some people? And I started to write, and this is what came out of my being on kidney dialysis yesterday. Jeremiah was a prophet. He suffered a lot. He did. And he was ridiculed, and he was persecuted for delivering an unpopular message. He was unjustly put in a dungeon pit. And he suffered in the dungeon pit. But he was a major prophet. He delivered the word of God to the people. Now, you might think, well, he might get lifted up in his own head, thinking, I'm a prophet. I deliver the words of God. God speaks to me and I speak to the people. Isn't that a great thing? Isn't that a great thing? But look what he said in Jeremiah chapter 20 and verse 14. Cursed be the day in which I was born. Can you imagine? A great prophet. God's telling him what to say and he says it. And he says in Jeremiah 20:14, cursed be the day in which I was born. That's a head-scratcher of a sort. You would think you would give up everything you had if God would speak to you and you would speak to the people. Would you think that? Now, in verse 18, same chapter, Jeremiah said, Wait, the lighting over here. I have to hold my paper up. Maybe my ink was not dark enough. But anyway. Why did I come forth from the womb to see labor and sorrow, that my days should be consumed in shame? Shame, because he was ridiculed. And he felt that he's in shame because he keeps talking things that are negative to the people, because they're sinning. Now, in verse 12, Jeremiah 20:12, this is what he said. But, O Yahweh of hosts, you who test the righteous. Now, that's a very interesting phrase. You who test the righteous and see the mind and heart, let me see your wrath on them, for I have pleaded my cause before you. He wants to see his detractors, his persecutors, the people that throw him in a dungeon. He wants to see wrath come upon them. He was annoyed. He was angry at the suffering he was doing. But the important phrase in that whole thing is, you who test the righteous. You who test the righteous. I'm going to tell you of an interesting thing that my wife and I both were there to witness in the year 2020. And it happened on the days of unleavened bread. The year 2020 on the days of unleavened bread. In that year, we were in California. No, excuse me. We were in Oregon, north of California, Oregon. And at that feast site, there was a woman who I was surprised to see. I had heard of her years ago, in the 1980s especially. In the 1980s, I had a job in which, during the lunch hour, I was allowed to play the radio. And so during the lunch hour in the 1980s, there was Constance Cumby on the radio. quite a few times as a guest. Now, Constant Cumby happens to be the world's leading expert on the New Age movement. And so she often spoke on the New Age movement. And she was invited to come to the speech site, the Days of Unleavened Bread in Oregon. And she came over there. She was there the whole feast. And every evening, 7 evenings, she gave an optional 1-hour lecture on the New Age movement. And it was interesting. I did hear some of that years and years ago. And this was 2014. Now, in the year 2014, she was 72 years old. I was 71 years old. But we were both there at the feast, and it was a pleasure to get to talk to her across the table. Because I had read Dave Hunt. I don't know if you ever heard of Dave Hunt, but he wrote a paperback book on the New Age movement. And I asked her about Dave Hunt, and she knew Dave Hunt. So it was really interesting to talk to her face-to-face across the dinner table during the time of the feast there. She just rubbed shoulders with everybody over there. You could sit down at the table and talk to her. And she was a well-known personality if you listen to the radio and listen to these type of things. Now, one of the things that she began with in her 7 days of lecture in the evening, optional, to hear about the New Age movement, she began talking about her life. And one of the things that I was surprised to hear is what happened a few years after she got married. A few years after Constance Cumby got married, she said that in the city of Detroit where they were living, her husband and she, her husband was putting things in the trunk of the car and it parked on the city street in Detroit. And what happened was a car came ramming into him and crushed him in the back of the car. Crushed him. And both of his legs were amputated. Now, that's a great tragedy. And she was, this was more important than all of the stuff she said about the New Age. This was far more important than all of what she said about the New Age movement. And that was an interesting subject. I'm not going to discuss the New Age movement itself, except to say that if anyone is grounded in the Bible, you'll never fall for it. It's only the weak people who don't read the Bible that can fall for it. But I don't want to discuss the New Age movement. But I want to discuss the fact that she suffered. She suffered because her husband suffered. And she traveled all around the country lecturing on the New Age movement. But her husband could never go with her. Her husband could never go with her because of the fact that both of his legs were amputated, and it was just too much of an effort for him to travel by plane and travel around across the United States hearing her lecture and witnessing her lecture. And so for decades, even at that time of the feast, the Days of Unleavened Bread, her husband could not come with her to Oregon to be at the feast because he was there in Detroit with both his legs missing. And so you ask, what does the Bible have to say about this? Suffering does happen to some of us. And, you know, I was on dialysis yesterday, but I got satisfaction because I felt thoughts coming to me, and my pen was going, and I was getting a spiritual lift, because I was seeing things, some things I puzzled over. I wrote down a puzzle that I had, and I had to wait till later on when I got a Bible to figure out the solution to the puzzle. And so this was a very exuberant time I had while I was on dialysis yesterday with 2 needles in my arm. But it's an interesting thing, and I have to discuss the subject. It's an important subject. I want to read first 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 7. You who are kept by the power of God through faith for salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious, than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Yeshua Christ. And so there is some suffering, but that's not worthy to be compared with the glory that we have in the future. Now, Paul discussed some of the trials that he had. I'm not going to go through the part of that discusses the various things. He was stoned twice, and yet even after he was stoned, he got right up and continued walking after the people that stoned him walked away. You have to wonder, how can a person do that? How can a person be stoned, and then the people that stoned him left him there for dead, they walked away, and then he got up and walked away. You could put up with a lot if you have God's help. You can put up with a lot if you have God's help. That's an important principle. I'm not going to tell you, I'll tell you where it is, but I won't go and read it. It's in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 23 to 28, that Paul discusses as many trials and hardships. 2 Corinthians 11, 23 through 28. Now, here is what I began to ponder. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 9, we're going to read the whole context, but I'm going to focus on what one thing he said in that verse. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 9, Christ said to Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient for you." Now, what does that mean? You know, grace is one of the qualities, the great qualities of God toward us, His grace toward us. In fact, when I spoke about it the other day, when Moses asked God to show him what he's like, to show him his glory, he wanted to know him. One of the things that God said to him in terms of knowing him was grace. Grace is a way to know him, his grace to you. And grace is a good thing. It's a good thing. And so the question is, if grace is such a good thing, why did God say to Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you"? He said that because Paul had this thorn in the flesh. And Paul said, he prayed three times, "Get the thorn in the flesh out of me. I want to get rid of this thorn in the flesh." And he was told, "My grace is sufficient for you." But you see, how is grace a good thing? If he had to suffer, why was that a good thing? Why was that good? Why was that sufficient that he was left suffering? And so I began to ponder, grace is such a good thing. Why was that sufficient? How can a sufficient thing be something that's painful? You know, that's weird. And so I began to ponder that, and I just couldn't wait till I got the Bible out so I could try to figure it out. Because, but here's the problem. The problem was, I read this many, many, many times in the past. But when I read it those many, many times in the past, my focus was on the wrong thing. My focus is on what was the thorn in the flesh. I got to figure out what the thorn in the flesh was. I'd spent time and time and time trying to figure out the thorn in the flesh. But that's not the important thing. I was looking at the wrong thing. I was trying to figure out the thorn in the flesh. That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the thorn in the flesh was. Because there are different theories. People write papers, give sermons. What was the thorn in the flesh? And they're missing the big picture. See, that's what I learned. They were missing the big picture. And so that was That was the puzzle. I've heard sermons on that. Never before did I try to figure out what was so good about the grace. How was it sufficient? And so it hit me. I'm 80 years old, all these years I just skipped over what was so good about the grace. How was it sufficient? I shook my head. I said, I can't believe it. All these years I was missing the big picture. And so I wonder about this. It's amazing. So let us study the whole context of the first 10 verses of 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 through 10. I'm going to read those 10 verses. However, I'm going to intersperse some comments as we go along. Paul wrote, verse 1, 2 Corinthians 12, "It is without a doubt not beneficial for me to boast." In other words, he said, I don't like to boast. "I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord." Now, what he's going to say for the next four verses, he doesn't want to brag about the experience he had, and so he says it in such a way that he doesn't even want to make it clear he's talking about himself. He doesn't even want to make it clear he's talking about himself because he doesn't want to brag about the experience. And so he says in verse 2, "I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body, I do not know, or whether out of the body, I do not know. God knows. Such a one was caught up to the third heaven." And the third heaven is the place where God dwells. The Father dwells in the third heaven. And so he says, "I was caught up to the third heaven." That's the heavenly realm, the throne of God, the throne of Yahweh, the throne of the Father. Verse 3. "And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. How he was caught up into paradise." And paradise only occurs one time. There's one time in the whole Bible that way. It's a Greek word. And essentially, people who write commentaries say paradise is the place of future happiness. The place of future happiness. "And heard incomprehensible words, which is not lawful for a man to utter." And so you could imagine this is a very exuberant thing. It's an exuberant experience that this man, speaking about himself, utters. It's an exuberant experience, that he's talking about. It really must have given him quite a lift to hear these sounds that it's unlawful for a man to utter. And not even understanding how he's experiencing it, not knowing if he's in the body or out of the body. That must have been a very, very joyful experience for him to have. Verse 5. "Of such a man I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities." That's an interesting thing. He is willing, wants to boast, but only on his infirmities. Verse 6. "For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool. For I will speak the truth, but I will refrain." Refrain from what? From writing. He will refrain from writing specifically. "Lest anyone should think of me above what he sees in me to be or hears from me." Now, verse 7 has some very interesting comments. Verse 7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations." And this is a key thing. This is more important than the thorn in the flesh in a certain sense. lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations. In other words, he felt a great exuberance when he was told things that he could never know on his own. When he received revelations, that gave him an exalted, exuberant feeling. He just loved to receive revelations. And so he says, by the abundance of the revelations, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Now, it's a very interesting thing that Constance Cumby, when she was speaking in the introductory message about the New Age movement, she said that her husband having his two legs amputated was a thorn in the flesh to her. It was a thorn in the flesh to her. And she said that Satan did that because she was speaking against the New Age movement and Satan didn't like it. And the way that he got at her was having her live year after year after year with her husband having two legs amputated. So some of us have a thorn in the flesh. I have, for 3 years now, I've had kidney dialysis. A thorn in the flesh. And so, you know, it doesn't matter. Everyone has their own thorn in the flesh, perhaps, sooner or later. And you have, just like everyone has a burning bush. You know, Moses in Exodus 3, verse 1, he saw a bush burning, but it didn't burn up. And so we have a bush burning up. I thought we have a burning bush experience that leads us to Christ, that causes us to be converted, that causes us to want to be baptized, that causes us to have faith. We have a burning bush experience, and we also have a thorn in the flesh experience. That two very important experiences. Verse 8, concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. That's a strange thing to say. For my strength is made perfect in weakness. That's another puzzle. How is your strength made perfect in weakness? How is your strength made perfect in weakness? And so that's why this verse is a puzzling verse. First of all, how is grace sufficient? Grace is a good thing. And how is the good thing sufficient? And his thorn in the flesh is not relieved. Now, we're going to see this. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities than that the power of Christ may rest upon me. That the power of Christ may rest upon me. What was the power of Christ? The power of Christ was the joy that he could receive by the revelations. The joy that he could receive by the revelations, that was the power of Christ resting upon him. And Paul got so much joy by the revelations that he was given that he was happy with the infirmities that he had. He was happy with the infirmities that we had. Now, sometimes when we go through trials that are painful, we look at the wrong thing. We look at the wrong thing. We need to look at the beauty of the scriptures and what it reveals to us and the fruits of the Spirit, that we can have peace despite pain. Peace despite pain. That we could contemplate the great riches of God. We could contemplate those things and with that contemplation. I mean, you read through Psalm 119, how the marvelous wisdom in the law is there. And he ponders, it's such a huge, long chapter, with more verses than any other chapter in the entire Bible. And he keeps wondering about the beauties of in the law. The beauties in the law. And yet, it boggles my mind that certain branches of people that call themselves Christians want to throw it out. It's so weird. It's so weird. You got the longest chapter in the entire Bible and the longest chapter of the beauty in the law that some people want to throw it out. Oh, isn't that a conundrum? Isn't that a conundrum? That's funny. It's almost funny. It's laughable. Well, one of the things it's important to discuss, what is grace? What is grace? Some people have a wrong attitude toward grace. They think that grace does away with the law. Wow! It's strange. Well, first, to just give a definition of it, I'm going to give a definition of... but anyway, the power of Christ is inspired revelation. According to Paul, in that context, the power of Christ is inspired revelation. Paul would rather have the revelations and the spiritual strength than a life without trials. He would rather have the revelations than a life without trials. That's what's so significant about this. Grace is favor that you cannot earn. But it's not automatic. It's not a blank check. And there are scriptures that show that it's not automatic and it's not a blank check. You can't earn it, but it's still a favor. And that is itself a conundrum. Here's an interesting thing. Here's a man that suffered. I'm going to tell you about a man in the Bible that suffered. Yet he found grace. Noah, because Noah was a preacher for 120 years. He was a preacher for 120. He went around telling, and nobody cared. Nobody wanted to listen about the flood. So he kept going around from place to place all around. He was telling them about the flood for 120 years. Nobody listened to him. Nobody listened to him because they all perished in the flood. But what does it say in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8? Noah found grace in the eyes of Yahweh. That's what it says. Noah found grace in the eyes of Yahweh. And in the next verse, part of the verse says, Noah walked with God. Noah walked with God. That's why he found grace. So could grace be a blank check? Can grace be free? If it was a blank check, then nobody would have died in the flood. But people died in the flood. So it was not a total blank check. If you don't walk with God, you don't have that. You don't have grace. And see, so even though you can't earn it, even though you cannot earn grace, it's still not a blank check. It's not totally free. Isn't that weird? Because over and over again, Paul makes it clear in the book of Romans, it's not something free. But he makes it appear as if it's free in parts. In Romans 11, he makes it appear that it's free, but I'm not going to go to Romans 11 right now. Now, so everyone except Noah's family died in the flood. Everyone, because they didn't walk with God. I want to read James chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. It's a quotation from Proverbs 3, verse 34. It's a quotation from the Old Testament, James 4, verses 6 and 7. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So he doesn't give grace to any old person. He gives grace to the humble. And what happens if a person has pride, a lot of pride? Well, maybe you shouldn't expect to get grace. Because grace is a favor. It's a good thing. Grace is a favor. That's what grace means. It's grace is favor that you cannot earn. It's something that's good, that you cannot earn. It was good for Paul to get these revelations. And he had such joy at getting those revelations. Verse 7 says, therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So even though the devil is around, you have the power to resist, and you have the promise that he will flee from you. Now, to crown this off, I want to read Hebrews chapter 12, verses 14 and 15. It says, Hebrews 12, 14, 15, pursue peace with all people and holy living, without which no one will see the Lord. Pursue holy living, without which no one will see the Lord. Looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God. Fall short of the grace of God. In other words, you can fall short of getting it. You can fall short of it. If you can fall short of it, then it's not totally free. It's not a blank check. Lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. So, what is this root of bitterness? The root of bitterness is if you're not handling the trial well and you feel bitter because of it. You feel bitter because you're not handling the trial well. And so that's an important thing. You have to avoid feeling bitter. You know who was such a great example at not feeling bitter? It's Job. Job suffered and he suffered and he suffered, and his wife came at him. Job's wife came at him and said, curse God. And so his wife was a plague to him. Job's wife was a plague upon him. Isn't that amazing? Job's wife was a plague. And regardless of all of the plagues of Job's wife against him, he was more than a conqueror. He was more than a conqueror. Yes. Well, he went a little too far on maintaining his integrity. But that's another story. I don't want to get into that now. But the point is, Job did not develop a root of bitterness despite all the suffering that he had. And he's a lesson to us. It's in the Bible as a lesson to us. Next, I want to read Hebrews 4, verse 16. Hebrews 4, verse 16. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. See, that's important. In other words, if we have troubles, we are told to go to the throne of grace, the throne of help when we have need. That's what we are to do. Now, whether we get an answer sooner or later, that's not important. The importance is we are to go to the throne of grace. We are to pray when we have problems. We are to pray for other people, for their needs, for their safety. First, more than our own. And so the throne of grace is the place we go in prayer when we have needs for others and for ourselves also, but spend more time on others than on yourself. Paul received great joy from receiving revelations. This joy of revelations was a grace given to him. That was a grace given to him. The joy of revelations. When he said that his grace was sufficient, that grace that he received was the revelations. That was the grace. The grace was the revelations. That was the grace. The joy of revelations was the grace given to him. That was more important than having the thorn of flesh removed. The joy of the revelation was more important to him than having the thorn of flesh removed. The thorn kept him humble, and that was a good thing. The thorn in the flesh kept Paul humble. And humility is an important quality that allows you to receive grace. God gives grace to the humble. And so he was given the joy of the revelations, but kept humble by the thorn in the flesh. And that is what I did not see before. Because I kept focusing on what's the thorn in the flesh? What's the thorn in the flesh? I wasn't focusing on the more important thing. And so I felt happy when I finally figured it out. I figured it out with the pencil and the pen. I figured it out. That's part of a play, a Broadway play. But anyway. And so I had a revelation when I figured it out. And I had joy. I had joy when I figured it out. Now, verse 10. The verse 10 is the last of the verses in that whole thing. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities. I take pleasure in infirmities because then I get the revelations and I can have joy. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for the sake of Christ. For when I am weak physically, I have to add italics physically, for when I am weak physically, then I am strong in italics spiritually. When I am weak physically, then I am strong spiritually. I have to add italics to physically, italics to spiritually.
So what he's saying is about the revelation. He couldn't receive the revelation, he
had
humility.
Right. He had to have humility to receive the revelation, and he had the thorn in the flesh to keep him humble. So this is such a beautiful thing. It's exuberant when you realize that you can have joy in the suffering. Now, I want to read Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Romans 5, 1 through 5. Therefore, having been declared innocent by faith, we have peace with God. We have peace with God through our Lord Yeshua Christ, through whom we also have access by faith into this grace in which we stand. We stand up in the grace and boast in hope of the glory of God, because in the resurrection we will have the glory of God. In the resurrection, that's the glory. And so we stand and boast in the hope of the glory of God. We boast in that hope of the glory of God. And not only that, but we also boast in afflictions. Not only that, we boast in afflictions. Isn't that interesting? It says we boast in afflictions. Now, that's an interesting thing. Because instead of boasting in afflictions, we sometimes want to complain in afflictions. And we shouldn't be complaining in afflictions. We should be boasting in afflictions, because the afflictions keep us humble. And by being having the humility, then we could receive the grace. You see? That's how you understand this. Verse 3 is a very important verse, Romans 5, verse 3. And not only that, we also boast in afflictions, knowing that affliction produces spiritual qualities, perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. Now, hope, and spiritual hope is what it's talking about. Now, spiritual hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us. We have to look at the spiritual things more than the physical things. We have to recognize the joy of the revelations, the things that you know that you could not find by purchasing it with money. These are spiritual blessings. and you need to accept and receive the fruits of the Spirit when you feel this internally. And if you show the fruits of the Spirit, then that's going to affect other people. Other people can see that even though you're suffering, you could be happy. You could receive joy, even though you're suffering. And when other people see that, that is something that they can gain from it and recognize the Holy Spirit is working in you, because you could receive the fruits of the Spirit as a witness to them. You could receive the fruits of the Spirit as a witness to them. John 14, verse 27. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. John 15, 11. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. See, the Apostle Paul experienced that joy that came with the revelations. And his joy was full. John 16, 33. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulations, but take courage. Be of good cheer. Be happy. I have overcome the world. And you can overcome the world by the joy of the revelations. I want to read James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Isn't that said to be a wonderful thing, patience? The testing of your faith produces patience. You know, I spent 3.5 hours on dialysis every Monday and every Wednesday and every Friday, 3.5 hours. But I have time to pray for other people. I have time to take notes. I have time to ask, what do you have for me today? And I've got a pen there and a paper there with my right hand. Because my left hand is fixed. I can't move my left hand. It has to be hooked up to the machine. If I move my left hand, then the machine beeps. Bop, beep, bop, bop, bop. And some nurse has to come over and say, oh, you're moving your hand. Don't move your hand. The machine won't beep. If you move your hand, it will beep. And so they have to go push a button on the machine to stop the beeping. And he says, don't you move your hand. So my left hand has to stay in a fixed position for 3.5 hours. But I have a right hand. And that's a wonderful thing. And with my right hand, I can write. And I also can read a book with my right hand. And so that's a good thing. And so I get things coming to my head that I can write. And the wonderful thing that happened yesterday is I prepared the guts of the sermon, except for the solution. I had to go to the Bible leader and see the solution. But I was able to get joy in writing down some of the details, Job and other things, with my right hand. And I had joy while I was on dialysis yesterday. That was a joy. And so I don't feel unhappy. That was a good thing. At the end of the whole time, the nurse came over and she unhooked me and said, how do you feel? I said, I feel great. I feel great. I asked for a sermon and I got a sermon. And I feel so great. And so she looked at me and I said, I've hardly ever felt as good as I feel right now. And that was a good thing. I really felt good. I really felt happy. It was one of the best endings of dialysis I've ever had. I can't imagine. I'm going to read now Nehemiah 4:10. Nehemiah 4:10. The joy of Yahweh is your strength. The joy of Yahweh is your strength. You know, Paul felt the joy of Yahweh because of the revelations. And you can feel joyous despite trials. Now I want to read Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. Joy is a good work. Happiness is a good work. Fruits of the Spirit is a good work. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. In other words, to be a good witness. You should have both good works, showing the fruits of the Spirit as a witness, along with a thorn in the flesh. You can show them both. I want to read Romans 8, verses 16 through 23. Romans 8, verse 16. The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If indeed we suffer with Him. Isn't that interesting? We are joint heirs with Christ if indeed we suffer with Him, that we may also be glorified together. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. The revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, not because it wanted to suffer, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. Subjected it in hope because by humility we can receive grace. Because the creation, verse 21, itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. And so we can have that redemption through the suffering. The last verse, Psalm 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but Yahweh delivers him out of them all. And that's if you receive the Spirit.